Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by everybody's favorite guest. Matt Moore of the Action Network is joining us to talk about all of this Anthony Davis stuff. I'm recording this right now at noon my time. I usually put these up at about 9 at the night before they're supposed to air. So we'll see if anything develops in between now and then. If so, then, you know, I'll just add to the show at the end of it. But let's just get to what we can get to right now. Matt, first and foremost, I've had fun covering this one. I'm exhausted all the time, but I've had fun covering this Davis thing. Am I just going insane?
No, like the team that you cover and that you love, it's on the verge of landing a top five player in the NBA. Like, of course you're excited. This is phenomenal. I imagine like this is what Kurt Hallen and Darius Arianna felt like back in 2008 when they were on the verge of landing Andrew Bynum, or not Andrew Bynum, Pau Gasol. Like, yeah. You know, this is what Celtics fans felt like the day that KG got, when the KG rumors kicked up. Like, these are transformational trades that wind up altering a franchise forever. And you've already had one of those moments when LeBron signed this summer, and you get two because you're the Lakers. That's very exciting for you.
I appreciate the reverse jinx. I appreciate the reverse jinx attempt here. I don't think the Lakers get Anthony Davis. Based on the stuff that we've heard from New Orleans, like, I just wrote about Dell Demps is literally ignoring calls right now. Like, he doesn't. So he's in the span of like 24 hours, he has asked the league to start an investigation that into tampering between LeBron and Rich Paul and Anthony Davis, and then the Lakers by extension. And Chris Haynes went on the record to say that investigation will probably make it all the more difficult, if not impossible, to make a trade happen before the trade deadline. And then if this gets all the way to the summer and Boston and New York get involved, if a deal is close between those three organizations, say the Knicks, Boston, and the Lakers, I don't see why Demps would send Davis to LA.
Yeah, I mean, this really just comes down to, I mean, at the end of it, it comes down to ownership. Like, this is a really fascinating thing. It's like everyone is very much on record as saying Gail Benson doesn't care. Like, Gail Benson doesn't care about basketball, doesn't care about the Pelicans, yeah. Doesn't care about the team, doesn't care about Anthony Davis, doesn't care about any of it. Like, just doesn't care. Just like, it's a thing her dad got because Stern gave it to him, right? Mm-hmm. And so if she's just like, this is a headache, I don't like this, go away. Like, just make this go away. Then Dell's going to have to be like, but we get a terrible deal if we do that. And she'll be like, I don't care, go away. Just get it done. I don't want to deal with it anymore. Then because that's what, like, Rich Paul's banking on. Like, Rich Paul's banking on, like,
just making enough noise and, yeah.
This is the most brazen coordinated assault on a franchise I have seen in the entire time I've covered the NBA. Like, Dan Fagan is, like, somewhere in the afterlife is like, hats off to you, sir. I would have never dreamed of going this far. This is an unparalleled assault on a franchise to try and apply pressure. 10 days before the deadline, you let them know. The following Monday, you go on record in an unprecedented move with two reporters to let them know and to say, we just want to help them out and make sure that they can get the best deal possible, which is why we're leaking it to you and destroying every ounce of leverage you have. The same day, a report comes out from somewhere, who knows, that Boston is not a preferred destination and Kyrie Irving could be leaving. And then on top of all of it, there is in the background the same scheme of – this is where I have a history of this from covering aggregation for so long. I don't read the reports. I read past the reports into what they mean. And when you have Sam Amick, Chris Haynes, Adrian Wojnarowski, Shams, the LA reporters, everyone connected to Rich Paul – or sorry, to Anthony Davis's camp, whoever that may be – saying – they have not informed the Pelicans that the Lakers are his preferred destination, but a list of teams is expected soon. By the way, here's one. I don't know if this is true. I can't confirm that this is true. So I don't know for sure. The buzz around the league is there's already a list.
Like, oh, that's, I'd be shocked if there wasn't.
Yeah, like there's already a list. So like that's going to get out at some point. So anyway, there's been this whole coordinated attack. And the question is, can the Pelicans withstand the pressure over the next 8 days to not do it? Because regardless of how you feel about the Lakers assets, unless you're just like the biggest Lakers fan in the world and you're just like, I don't understand what they're waiting for. This is clearly the best deal. Everyone else is like, look, you have to at least wait. Like even folks that don't think badly of the Lakers trade package are like, yeah, but I mean, you got to wait and see who wins the lottery. You got to wait and see, like you can wait, you got to wait and at least get Boston in the conversation to see if you can improve what would already be a, you know, if you consider the Lakers deal good, why not wait to see if you can get a better one if the Celtics come back with a better offer than you're expecting? Like there's just all these reasons. There's zero reason to do it now. The only reason it's being talked about this much is because Davis and his agent are specifically trying to engineer a situation to force him to one team whose leverage depreciates over time.
Yeah, I think we'll take a break here for a quick second. But when we come back, I want to talk about the timeline here, because it's the most fascinating aspect of this to me, because it's the thing that I'm the least clear about, but I don't know if that has to do with my own biases or whatever might else be at play here. So we'll take a quick second, and when we come back, we'll talk about that. So I said on a previous show that on one hand, it makes it, I think I stand the clearest on, yeah, you probably want to wait this out and let the Celtics at least get some kind of bidding war going. You want the Knicks to get involved just in case they get the top pick, and you see if maybe you can get Kristaps and that top pick. And then, you know, there was a talk that maybe Kevin Knox might be involved too. So, like, I on one hand, I get why you would do it from that standpoint. And then the thing that kind of dawned on me this morning was, well, Dell Demps is kind of a walking dead man. And so you're kind of looking at it from a standpoint of, well, at least he gets a few more months of employment. And then maybe depending on the package that he gets for Anthony Davis, he can stick around for the rebuild afterward because Gail Benson doesn't really care. And so, like, it's getting hard for me to really picture why the Pelicans would make a trade now. But, like, let's say Boston, you know, because Danny Ainge is the most trustworthy guy in the NBA. Let's say Boston reneges on offering Jason Tatum and the Knicks don't win the lottery. Yeah. Then what? Then what for New Orleans? Like, yeah, their situation legitimately worsens.
I don't know that it worsens. I don't know that it worsens because you have to remember the picks. Like, what's the best pick? What's the best package of picks that the Lakers can offer?
Oh, all of their own. They don't own anybody else's.
Okay, so you're talking about I think LeBron gets back this year, even if they don't get Davis, and I think they're going to probably land in like the top six. Okay, mm-hmm. And so you're talking about probably a top 18, like eight. You're looking at like 18 plus, right? The top like a back 12 pick. Okay, this year. So you get the 2019, so you're getting the back 12 pick. That's you're hoping for a rotation player, right? Like mm-hmm. a rotation guy. Like your best scenario is like you land somebody, like you're like, get Kuzma. That's what you're hoping for, right? Mm-hmm. Can't trade next year, Stepien rule, okay? Yep. Year after that, you got another one. Guess what? That's LeBron in his third year, and now he's got Anthony Davis, right? So he's got Anthony Davis for 2 years. They probably acquired a third star somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. One of the young kids has probably developed into a really good player. And so now that pick's probably top 10, like back 10, mm-hmm. probably 20 through 30. So you're talking, that's like, and now you're at two picks. You want to add a third? All right, three picks. So that's 2 years out from then. Now you're talking about the post LeBron era. And that's actually where I think it gets interesting. Like if I was the Pelicans, the number one thing I would say on the table is I want LeBron signed a 4-year deal in the summer of 2018. So in the summer of 2022, I want your first round. Sorry, 2023. I want your first round unprotected pick in 2023. That's what I want.
Yeah. No matter what. I would even pass up on next year's picks, right? Like, yeah. Or yeah, I would wait. I would start the times when those picks can come in as late as I possibly can.
Yeah, I think it's either 5 or 7 years. I can't remember. There's a limit on how far out you can project out picks, which I think is dumb. But mm-hmm. like, I specifically want the year after LeBron LeBron's contract is set to retire or set to expire, because you assume that by that point he's like 37, 38, and he's probably going back to Cleveland to play one more year and retire. Mm-hmm. If he resigns with the Lakers, it's at a diminished rate. You know, you deal with that when it comes. Like, if that's how the ball balances, all right. But that would be your starting block. But the Celtics this summer, your point that you've been making on Twitter is really relevant. Like, I want to be very clear on this. I am not the Celtics are totally a better offer. Rule number one is don't deal with Danny Ainge.
Yeah.
Rule number one, even when you think you get a good deal, it sours on you.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, I got this bag of apples. Cool. And then you get it home, and at the bottom of the bag of apples, it's all rotten, and there's a viper that bites you and you die. Like, that's dealing with Ainge. Four executives have all used the phrase pulling teeth. Unprompted, when I asked about what it was like to deal with him.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare, because you go into it and you're like, so you're going to, they'll go like, all right, we're going to want Tatum. And he's like, okay, for sure, Tatum. Now, just hear me out. Look, we can talk Tatum in a minute, but just hear me out. What do you think about Yabusele in a second round? And then, like, I'll just make up some sort of contract. What do you think? Huh? Marcus Morris in a sign trade. Marcus Morris.
Right.
Like, it's a nightmare. So your point about Ainge is completely valid. However, like, a realistic bad case scenario for Boston, for a deal with Boston, is you get Jaylen Brown, who you're totally been bad this year. Absolutely. Was really good last year, was really promising the year before, has had a down season in which he has not had the kind of usage I think that he probably needs in order to be a little bit better. He's not gonna be a star, but just like a little bit more usage.
Mm-hmm.
You get Rozier as a point guard. Okay, that, you know, Rozier's been garbage this year, but guess what? He's been really good when Kyrie's out. So again, you got two guys who specifically are struggling with Kyrie, and Kyrie's making comments about how the young guys are a problem. Like, put two and two together here. Okay, so you get those two guys. But then more importantly, you're able to say, I want the Memphis pick, I want the Clippers pick, I want your picks. I want five picks. And the Celtics are able to say, so only two of those are ours and one of them's protected? Okay. Like, we don't need those. We're going to have Anthony Davis and a whole bunch of them. We're going to have Anthony Davis and Gordon Hayward and Marcus Smart and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like, on down the line. So you're able to basically refill on all this stuff, and they can expend those picks. And those picks are going to be more valuable to you as New Orleans, because those picks are going to be, like, the Memphis pick. If it doesn't land top eight, you know, it's even less protected next year. If it lands above top eight, you're getting, like, you're going to get, at worst, like, 12 this year. You're getting like the 12th pick. If you get the Kings pick, right? If the Kings don't make the playoffs, you're talking about you land a really good pick. You still land a really good pick. The Clippers pick, if the Clippers don't make the playoffs, you're still going to land a really good pick, even if they don't win the lottery. And there's a chance that any one of those could pop off. And if obviously the Kings pick goes one, it goes to Philly. But still, there's all this opportunity for three really good top 15 picks to land in your lap. And if you're trying to rebuild after Anthony Davis, that's what you want. Because you take those moves and you move Drew Holiday and Nikola Mirotic, and all of a sudden you're like, I have a seven-man core of rookies, which is way too much. But you can package those together and say, in a weak draft, you can go to teams and be like, okay, I will give you the 18 and the 12 for the 7. And in a weak draft, there's a good chance that happens. So, like, that possibility is way, way better rather than just what the Lakers have to offer in these tangible assets, because those tangible assets are debatable. And so the possibilities, I think, are even though this deal would have to be completed after the draft, you are still talking about, even if the Celtics would basically agree to this deal prior. And then, you know, the Pelicans could be, and even if they don't, the Pelicans could be like, here's who, like, for future reference, here's the players that we're higher on. You should think about drafting these guys if you want to get in the conversation.
So I have questions about the Pelicans' drafting ability too. And it makes me lean more towards, like, I would want known commodities right now. If I were a Pelicans fan, I wouldn't trust my front office to be able to draft anybody. And now, the flexibility that comes with the first round pick, like, that is a legitimate tangible thing that even if you don't trust your front office to be able to draft, it makes sense to sort of try to package those players either for a known commodity or however you want to use those picks.
Okay, hang on. Where is your reservation about drafting coming from?
I just don't trust Dell Demps. Okay, I would give Dell Demps the least amount of flexibility as he can possibly have right now.
Okay, well, hold on. There's a couple things here. One, if Davis goes, by the way, Dell Demps is gone. Like, let's just be realistic about this. let's be serious. If Davis is gone, in 2010 when LeBron left, what happened? Danny Ferry, who had won a bunch of games over the last 4 years, was gone, just out the door. That was before all of his problems that followed him after. He was gone. Coach, gone. When guys move, like Monty Williams was the exception to this. Monty Williams was the only guy I've seen that survived that kind of, and that was because the following year, like Jarrett Jack and a bunch of nobodies, like put together a really good effort because Monty Williams is a hell of a coach. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, typically speaking, there's going to be turnover. So that's not really even a factor here. Second, I'm okay with you saying like I don't trust him to do this, but then you have to, you can't say like I don't trust him to draft. You have to be like, I don't trust him to evaluate players either. Like, I don't trust him to evaluate current play. If your premise is I don't trust Dell Demps to do things, but if you're but you were saying I don't trust him to draft, and the problem is you can't really make that argument because they've had what, since 2012 they've had 3 first round picks. 2012 they've had only 3 first round picks that they haven't traded, and one of them, by the way, was Nerlens Noel that they traded. So,
well, I guess I should have phrased it, I don't trust him to really do anything.
Okay, but then that's fine. Yeah. But then you're trying to make the argument for like what Pelicans fans, if you want to try and argue that Pelicans fans should want what the Lakers have.
No, okay. I'm saying that the Pelicans should want players, not draft picks.
Okay, but you have to delineate this though, cuz you're like, if I'm a Pelicans fan, like that makes sense cuz you're like, I don't trust Dell and I want somebody else. Mm-hmm. But if you're the Pelicans, you're not just like, oh, our GM's incompetent, I'm going to go ahead and, because that's also not, who's going to make that call? Like, is ownership going to make that call? Is ownership going to say, Dell's completely in, I have no way of establishing this because I'm Gail Benson and I don't know, but Dell is incompetent. I heard this on Lawmakers that Dell's incompetent. And so I don't want
Gail Benson, noted subscriber, yeah, to Locked On, yeah, Lakers.
And so I don't want him to have any power. And so I want him to get established players. Like, he's incompetent. So not only am I trusting him, I'm not going to trust him to get picks, but I'm going to go one step further. I am going to trust him to get established players of questionable value. Do you see how this doesn't track?
We got to take a quick second here, but when we come back, I want to build on this because again, it just comes down to like, all right, if we're talking about an owner who doesn't care and is in her own way incompetent, then you're going to trust that owner to go out there and hire a GM who is going to be better than Dell Demps. And
go to break. We'll come back. All right.
All right, so we're back here, and so that I guess I don't know how New Orleans makes a trade here that makes a ton of sense when I just don't trust them organizationally. If I was a Pelicans fan, I would want the surest thing that I can possibly get. That's why I would want the Pelicans to make the Boston deal, because Tatum is the surest thing of any commodity here.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So like, part of this is, it gets to the very core of it, is like, look, Anthony, like the Lakers, like Rich Paul has ruined the Pelicans. Like Rich Paul, I'm not trying to be over dramatic here. Like Rich Paul really seriously may have destroyed professional basketball in New Orleans. And the response will be like, well, they don't care about it anyway.
Well, like, no. It's not like they did a ton to build up professional basketball out there anyway.
I want to make this point for the people in the Lakers fans are going to listen to this. You do need to understand this, because this is something that if you're a fan of the Knicks, the Bulls, the Lakers, the Celtics, et cetera, you're never going to have this happen to you. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be a possibility. You don't have to worry about this. There are kids that go to these games. There are kids that watch these games on TV in their market, and that's how they become NBA fans. And for this 2 hours out of their week or their night, like, this is something that they really care about. And like, that's just as it's important to you as a Lakers fan. Like, you get to say, like, what's important to me because they're great. Okay, cool. But a lot of people, it's just like, no, this is like my team. This is my local team. I love this team. I love Anthony Davis. I love Jrue Holiday. I love this franchise. And like, Rich Paul is going to tear that out, and he's going to cost people jobs, because there is a huge economic impact when these kind of things happen. He's going to like, normal people, not billionaires. Like, Jrue Holiday is going to be fine. Nikola Mirotic is going to be fine. Julius Randle going to be A-okay. But there's a lot of people that are going to lose their jobs. There's a lot of people that are going to be in a bad position. There's a lot of people that are going to lose something that they love because of what Rich Paul is pulling off here. So that's okay.
Like, Rich Paul didn't trade for Omer Asik. Like this doesn't happen if New Orleans wins more than a playoff round with Anthony Davis. I mean, maybe it does.
Like, I mean, you look at the Pacers. The Pacers went to the Eastern Conference Finals twice. They had one of the years where they were the best team in the East.
But the Pacers, didn't Paul George specifically say that, like, the way that they broke up that team after their trip to the Eastern Conference Finals rubbed them the wrong way?
For sure. So I think part of what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that, like, the Pelicans are exempt from criticism here, because they are. Like, there is a degree to which you dug your grave. I think that, and it's like, building a good team is hard, and building a good team in a small market is exceptionally hard. Mm-hmm. Just is.
Agree with that. Yeah.
So like, and I agree with you. Like, part of my conclusion is like, look, the Pelican, your whole thing is like, I just don't trust this or that or the other. You're absolutely right. They're screwed. Like, they're screwed, Anthony. Like, there's no way that this goes out well for them. The most likely, think about it this way: when Orlando had to trade Dwight, okay, they got young players, assets, draft picks, cap space. They did exactly what you need to do. Mm-hmm. They tanked. They got a number two pick in Victor Oladipo. I forget what Aaron Gordon was, like five or six.
Yeah, he was right before Randall.
Yeah. They got all of these guys that were young, and it was like this young core, and it just didn't come together. It just didn't develop. It just didn't. And maybe that's coaching. Maybe that's coaching. Maybe that's your development staff. Maybe that's it. But maybe it's just that, no, like, Oladipo just needed a couple of years. He just needed a couple of years, and Aaron Gordon needs more years. And, you know, on down the line across the board. And so, and then ownership gets involved and is like, hey, I'm tired of us losing and being a laughingstock. Go get me a free agent. And the management says, but that's not going to work. And they go, I don't care. Go get me a free agent. Okay. So they trade off all their pieces to clear the cap, and they wind up signing Bismack Biyombo. You know,
that's summer of 2016.
Yeah. Like, that's what's facing New Orleans. It's like, the most likely scenario is that if they don't move, they're going to be horrible for a decade. That's the reality of what they're facing. There's no good scenario here. We're talking about the best of bad scenarios. And the question there is, you know, how bad is the Lakers relative to all this? How much is it worth trying to keep a good relationship with Rich Paul, which I would say probably not much. What do you want in return? Where should you try and aim the franchise? But, like, the hopes of New Orleans are very, very slim here for anything good to happen. Like, they are screwed.
I think the one thing I do trust New Orleans to be able to do here, because I really like Alvin Gentry, and maybe he doesn't make it through this either, but the one thing that I do trust them to be able to do is optimize the players that they get. I don't know if I trust the front office to be able to pick out the players that they would in the draft, but I would trust them to be able to develop the guys that they get.
That's a weird thing to say. Let's go look at the roster, okay? So Alfred Payton's playing well.
Mm-hmm. That has a lot to do with Davis, but yeah.
But he's been – no, like, Davis is obviously great. Like, Davis mm-hmm. is phenomenal. Number one. Two, Drew Holiday's great. Okay. Great player. Alfred Payton's played really well. Like, their record with Alfred Payton, Holiday,
it's Davis, crazy.
It's shocking. Like, I was prepared – I had written him off. I had defended Payton for years in Orlando, and then in Phoenix, I was like, this is his shot, and then he sucked there. And I was like, well, all right, I'm out. Like, can't be saved. But he's played really well this year. Mirotić is a good player. Julius Randle, Lakers fans know, is a good player. Mm-hmm. Etuan Moore is a good player. When he's the sixth best guy on the team, that's fine. Like, Etuan Moore is good enough to be the sixth best guy on the team, right?
I'd love to have Etuan Moore on the Lakers.
Right. Jahlil Okafor has been really good this year. I saw him live last Thursday. I was in OKC. He looks – he doesn't – it's not just the stat lines. Like, he looks really good.
He's lost a lot of weight.
Yeah. So, like, he's playing. So I look at that and I go, look, they were really good. Last year they made the playoffs because they were good defensively, and they just fell off the map this year. And to me, that's not roster.
Well, they've also – they lost Mirotić for a long time.
Mirotić is a stopper?
Huh?
Mirotić isn't a stopper?
No. I'm saying that like their team has underperformed, and if we're using that to like, are you making the argument that like Gentry has underperformed with this team because like they've had some crazy injuries, right? Like
they had crazy injuries, but here's part of it is like I believe the defense is systemic. I believe the defense is about more than anything is systemic. And I'm talking to players, this kind of tracks that you got to have personnel, you got to have guys that are physically able to do things. But more and more, the really key parts of being a good defense are about how do you play together, and that tracks across lineups and rotations. Like your better lineups in terms of talent will be better defensively, and your worst lineups will be worse. But you can still be good. It's why I keep being like with Houston and everybody being like, "Well, it's the injuries." I'm like, "No, like look, they got systemic defensive problems. Like their scheme, the switch scheme, is busted this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like teams are." I was talking to Billy Donovan about this. what the problems are now with trying to switch in the regular season and how much it's changed. It's really difficult, and defense is systemic. So I just think it's weird that we're talking about this, but I just think that I like Alvin Gentry too. I thought he was the number one guy for them to hire. I thought he was going to be great. I thought last year he was phenomenal. I was really happy for him. Great dude by all accounts. But I also think that at some point you have to just be like, if you just look at everything, their offense has been prolific. They just can't get stops. They just can't get stops. And that, to me, is more on a team-wide level. I don't think that New Orleans has done a good job. I don't think there's any way to argue that. I think that they took some gambles and they missed on all of them. Like, they took the gamble on, we can get Eric Gordon healthy and he can be good for us. And Eric Gordon didn't want to be there, and that failed. He was operating on pre-Warriors logic about, oh, I need a rim protector because AD doesn't want to play center. Okay, but you need a super switchable, hyper-mobile guy, not Omer Asik, yeah. Right? That was a horrific mistake that was built on decent logic that worked out as badly as it possibly could. They did as Solomon Hill. We wanted a defensive stopper because our defense is bad. We need a defensive guy. And he was really good defensively in Indiana. Okay, but you can't play him because he completely negates your offense. And in 2019, you can't have a guy that completely negates your offense unless you're the Lakers. So like, you just can't do these things. Like so all these things didn't pan out for them. Like, the overall job was poor. And they made mistakes, and they definitely made this bed for themselves. I can look at the reasons why and provide context, but they're still ultimately responsible. It just doesn't change the fact that, like, you could be responsible for getting for you getting screwed and still get screwed. And that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. They bought a car that they thought was a great deal. And it was, they knew at the time it was kind of shady and it might not work out. And then it just really did not work out.
Should he use those Yelp reviews to find a better dealer? So let me ask you, what's too much to give up?
Nothing. Nothing. There is no deal here that I think. So here's the thing that I've been saying all along with this Pelicans thing is that they already very obviously do not like or do not want to work with the Lakers. They don't want to work with Rich Paul. I would imagine that it's an extension of a Rich Paul thing. And then just generally, I don't think very many teams out there in the NBA like the Lakers very much, as evidenced by Greg Popovich apparently reportedly calling Demps or talking to Demps and telling him not to cave to the Lakers. I think there's some legitimate animosity there. And so because with all of that in mind, I think the Lakers need to work with the Pelicans in good faith and just show up and say, look, guys, we're not going to try to screw you. We're not going to try to strong arm you. Here's our offer. It's Ingram. It's Kuzma. It's Ball. You can take your pick between Zubats and Hart. And you can have a couple picks on top of that that start when Davis and LeBron, or especially when LeBron retires or is no longer in our employ.
I appreciate you saying that. And like, I think you'll be in the minority of folks. I will say, so here's the thing is, like, obviously my history with Lonzo, as given that I've just recently been unbanned from this podcast, it is, you know, up and down. I tend to try and want to be honest about him and realistic. I do think there's some value in trying to keep Lonzo.
He's the guy I want to hold on to the most.
Yeah. I think that that's the one, because you banked so much on, like, the introductory press conference being like, I expect your jersey to be hanging up there one day. And then a year later to be like, I have dealt you immediately along with 15 other things. I think that there's real value in trying to keep Lonzo. And I don't, it's tough. I talked about this yesterday on Twitter, and like, Lakers fans with how they feel about me. I wanted to know if I was crazy. You know, I want to know, like, look, maybe I'm just biased and unfair. Like, maybe that's just the case.
You are listed as Matt unbiased and unrealistic in my phone. So
there you go. So like, it should be number one Laker hater. That number one Laker hater. So, but like, I was bouncing off of league people, and these are not people that are like involved in these conversations or crucial to these discussions. And several of these people aren't even like key decision makers, but they're folks that know. And I was like, what? I just asked without like, hey, I think these guys are whatever. I just said, like, what's your thought on the Lakers package? The response was pretty negative. And I just don't know, because the difference is, I know that the guys that like those players really like those players. Like, if you think Brandon Ingram is good, you're like, I don't care. Like, I don't care about the shooting percentages or how he looks most nights or, like, any of it. I don't care. Like, I like the way that he looks as a player. And Demps comes from a scouting background. Like, he's not analytics forward. But he's just not. And most of their franchise that I know, most of their front office guys are not. They are a scout-heavy group. And there's been some conversation about this, about do analytics guys or scouts guys like Lonzo more? In my experience, it's been that the analytics guys really like Lonzo if they're into, like, very specific metrics. But overall, it doesn't grade out great. And then, like, the scouts really like him because a lot of his stuff is he's just got really great feel. It's this very ephemeral thing. Because I've tried to nail it down. I've been like, well, what is it? And they're like, he just knows how to play. What are you talking about? Like, give me an example. Like, is it how he dribbles? Is it this? Like, what? I want specifics. And I can't ever get them. It's always like, I just like the way, you know, he just plays with an energy. And it's just, it's like talking to like some hippie on the beach that's trying to sell you tarot cards. It's just, and that's difficult for me to try and get my brain around. That's why I did all the research I did on Lonzo, honestly, was it wasn't, I'm going to disprove this guy's good. It was, why am I unable to understand what everybody's referring to? Mm-hmm. But I do still think that there's that permeates. And it might be the case that Dell Demps is a guy that legitimately looks at Lonzo and goes, I want that guy. Like, that's not implausible to me. And that changes a lot. If Dell Demps looks at Lonzo and is like, I can win with that guy. And he looks at Jason Tatum and is like, that guy shoots a lot. But that changes things. It doesn't really matter what league perception is, what Twitter's perception is, what media's perception is. What matters is the assessment of the New Orleans front office on the assets available to them. Now, you're right that the personal animosity that has been created by the way that Davis's camp has gone about this, I think definitely plays a part. I think Dell Demps' relationship with Greg Popovich probably does play a part. I think the pre-existing like history between those franchises probably plays a part. But at the same time, you know, on some level, Demps is going to have to decide. If I try to imagine if I was in his position, and I would be very much defeatist because I'm a defeatist person. So I would go to ownership and management and say, look, I'm probably not going to be here. Let's just be real. I'm probably not going to be here.
And then be like, I'm just picturing a meeting starting with that. Look, you guys are going to fire me. Yeah. So what do you want me to do?
I would be like, look, the odds are not great that I'm going to be here. Like, that's just how this league works. However, I still have a responsibility to you as the general manager, president of basketball operations of the New Orleans Pelicans. My job is to do what's in your best interest under your direction and what I feel is best for the franchise. This is what I think we should do. What do you want? And, like, that's what I would do. And if they were like, well, we trust you to make the best decision for the franchise until we fire you, I would be like, okay, then I think that we probably need to wait and try and get Tatum because I'm very high on Tatum. And, like, Boston fans are not exactly love me. I've been known to irritate them as well, but I'm really high on Tatum. I'm really high on Hart. Like, in any sort of Lakers deal, Hart's the guy that I'm looking at and being like, that's the guy I want. I want Josh Hart no matter what. I want Josh Hart, no questions asked. So
I think – so the one of the things that I floated out there yesterday, and this will be the last thing that we touch on here, and it has to do with some of the stuff that you just kind of alluded to, especially the stuff about what people are saying about the Lakers package right now, is that – like, I've noticed that the value of the Lakers package in most people's, in a lot of people's eyes, is a lot more static than what people think of. Like, say, like Kristaps Porzingis hasn't played or will have not played in like a year and a half if he's a part of this Anthony Davis trade. And I'm just like, we're ignoring that? And we're ignoring the fact that the guy is going to be a free agent and really, really likes it in New York and probably won't stick around for a rebuild in New Orleans. Like, we're just not going to talk about that.
I don't want Kate. If I'm the Pelicans, I don't want him. I'm not even kidding. Mm-hmm. If I'm the Pelicans and I'm waiting for the Knicks offer, I'm waiting to see if they get the one. If they get the one, if they don't get the one, you're out of the conversation. That's it.
Yeah.
If you do not have – and that's – and like, oh, but we have the number two pick. Don't care. I don't want RJ Barrett. What am I going to do with RJ Barrett?
Right. You know? I guess I'm looking at it from the standpoint of, and it's been a really long time since LeBron played basketball. So with that as context, I can kind of understand why the recency bias is where it's at right now. But like the Lakers were at 4 or 5 when LeBron was there, and people thought really, really highly of Kuzma and thought really, really highly of Hart. And of course they suffered when LeBron went down and like half of the rotation went down. And now we're looking at it as like, well, this is what the Lakers package is, and this is what it's always going to be. And I just don't quite ride with that.
Here's what's really fascinating about it is like, I'm more bullish on the Lakers' chances than most people are. For as much hate as I get, I've said, and like, you can find the tweets. I've said, I think when LeBron gets back, I think they're in the 4 or 5. I legitimately, because I saw the rate that they were winning at with a very top win profile to start the season. Like, I pay more attention to win profile in the regular season than anybody else in the league. I feel confident about this. Mm-hmm. Anybody else in media, I'm the one guy that's like, I know who they beat, who they don't, who they struggle with. And I know which of those factors translate to getting playoff spots. The Lakers' win profile was excellent with LeBron. Mm-hmm. So all of this stuff, like, I haven't been the guy that's like, oh man, these guys suck. Look how terrible they are. I'm like, of course they suck. LeBron's not playing. But the difference is, I think, is you're saying they looked like really good players when LeBron was there. And my point is, no, I don't think that's true. I think that the team played well together when LeBron was there, which is not just a testament to LeBron. It's a little bit of a testament to those players' buy-in and how they fit into roles, which is better than honestly I expected. But I still, this is what I've been saying. I go by their players one by one to assess them, and I'm like, that's not great, that's not great, that's not great, that's not great, that's not great. And you say, what do you think of the team together? And I'm like, that's a really good team. Like, they are honestly greater than the sum of their parts.
Yeah.
And it's easy to be like LeBron, but I'm like, there's something beyond that. Like, they did have a spirit about them, and I think a lot of it was like they responded really well to the spotlight. Like, they came into the season after that Portland game, which was I think a letdown. After that, like, they were ready to go. They handed the Nuggets their first loss of the season. That's a really good team. Like, they are a really good team together. When you break them into individual assets is when you're like, oh boy, I don't know about this. Like, I don't know if I want this and this and this and this and this. But it's like, hey, can you win with these guys and LeBron? Yeah, you can win. You can't win as much as LeBron wants to, which is why he's got his associate conducting this action. But I think that that's kind of where I come down on it. And I agree with you on Kuzma and Hart, though. Those are the two guys that I agree with you where – of course, Kuzma and Hart look bad. Those are the guys that fit best with LeBron.
Yeah.
Like, those are complementary players to a superstar. If you trade those guys in New Orleans, Josh Hart's not going to look good unless you get somebody to go around him. But if you get somebody to go around him, all of a sudden it's like, okay. And my thing is, I'm like, Jrue Holiday could be that guy. If you got Jrue Holiday, Zion Williamson, and Josh Hart, I feel really good. I'm like, yeah, you might be able, like, that with a normal, with a like an average replacement level core, I'm like, all right, you're at 35 wins with a possibility of if you can make a run, you might be able to get to 500. That's a good starting place. Like, that's a really good starting place. Yeah. But for what you're saying about Porzingis, yeah, I agree with you there. Your point about the concrete assets, I think is, it's fair to say, like, wouldn't you rather have somebody that you know can play rather than Porzingis, who we haven't seen in a year and a half and who's never been part of, like, anything winning at all? That's a fair point. Like, I think that's a fair point. And like, I would rather have the Lakers assets than a mid-level pick from like Detroit, where you're like, this could be the one or it could be the 10. Like, that doesn't make any sense. That's why it doesn't make any sense to wait. You have to wait to the lottery, because there's also like, look, if there's a bunch of teams in there that I think that if they wind up landing it, like if, you know, if the Clippers land the one, if the Clippers miss the playoffs and land the one, right? And I don't know if that's protected to Boston or not. But regardless of whether it's the Clippers or Boston, all right, well, now you've got Zion included in that package. This is my only thing is like, I think even more than Tatum, because I'm with you, you can't trust Danny Ainge. I just think you got to wait to see where Zion goes. Yeah. If the Hawks win the lottery, guess what? You're probably making a deal with the Lakers.
Yeah. All right, so I guess we'll end on this note. How do you think this plays out? This definitely doesn't get solved by the deadline, I would imagine, and it probably doesn't get figured out until we figure out what the lottery looks like.
I think it's wrong for us to assume, because here's what we're all doing. We're all saying, well, there's no way they do it for the deadline. That doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, none of this makes any sense. Have you paid attention to the NBA the last 6 years?
Yeah, very few of the deals that have actually been made very much sense at the time.
Like, the Cavaliers had to trade Kyrie Irving, and they traded him for Isaiah Thomas and lost badly.
Yeah.
Like, nothing makes sense. So, again, a lot of it gets back to what I mentioned earlier is how strong is ownership. If ownership is like, no, we can wait. It's okay. I don't feel any sort of pressure. Like, Rich Paul wants us to trade in the Lakers. Tell Rich he can have a nice day. Like, just shut it down. Go ahead and wait. Now, if I were them, I would trade Jrue Holiday and Mirotić immediately. That's what I would do, is I would get ahead on the role players. I would be like, we're selling this off the parts because we know AD's gone. But I would wait. But I don't know if that's what they'll do. And that's why, if you're a Lakers fan listening to this, as much as like I've clearly complained about how this has gone down, because I find it to be – I just not how I would prefer to do business. It just feels wrong on a bunch of levels to me. But if you're a Lakers fan and your only concern is like, I don't care about any of this, I just want to get Anthony Davis – root for Rich Paul, because he is applying so much pressure. And if Paul wins this, you get a top five player next to the best player of all time. And that is a foundation on which you can build a championship team.
And flexibility over the summer.
Yep.
All right, man. Well, thanks very much for making time for me on very short notice. We talked for like 5 minutes and then started recording. So I greatly appreciate that. As always, I appreciate the insight. Is there anything that you want to plug before we get out of here?
I have a Paul George interview. I don't know if Lakers okay. fans want to read on that. But I talk to Paul George.
I like reading Paul George interviews just because the guy is like crazy corny. Like yeah. he's incredibly corny, and it's just really fun to take those apart.
I didn't find him to be that way, but we can talk about that another time. I am going to do a piece on the Lakers packages this week, and I promise you I won't be like, not all of this is garbage and they should not trade. Like, I will, like, I think there are reasonable deals to be found, and I think the Lakers package is not unattractive. So yeah,
I appreciate that. Well, I'll talk to you, I would imagine, soon. For everybody else listening, like I said earlier, if anything else happens that I have to update immediately, I promise I will hop on here and do that. But for now, enjoy the rest of your day, make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.